just my thought is, Dave, it's kind of redundant. You know, two somewhat similar DHTs. If I were to add in a, if I went with Mast in test or Primo in test, and then I wanted to add in a third compound, I would probably look to a different family, you know, be it a 19 nor or an oral, something that's going to be unique and different versus more of something that's going to be similar, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of popularity over here at the moment for test base with Mast and Primo. It's
all three?
All three.
Yeah.
I sort of see it a little bit as Mast will tend to act like a CIRM rather than an AI, where Primo will act more like an AI. But at the same time, I get what you're saying as well, because they're two very similar compounds, so they've got very similar planes of action and mechanism.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the podcast with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally, and all of our programming is brought to you by you. Thank you for the people from Patreon. You guys left us some questions that we're going to cover today. In fact, Dave, we've got about 30 questions. We're not going to be able to tackle them all. People missed you. You were away. You've been doing all sorts of education stuff. You couldn't even record yesterday, when our normal day. What were you doing yesterday?
Yesterday, I was talking at a conference at Birmingham Uni. I don't even know the title of the conference, I actually did a sort of, it was supposed to be, they called it a fireside chat, but it was me and a guy called Martin Chandler.
Okay.
Now, Martin was the guy that really got me into formal harm reduction work. I'd already been doing stuff off my own back, but it was Martin that got me into the more academic stuff and the conferences and that sort of stuff. So okay. I've been asked by a guy called Professor Jim McVeigh, and another guy called Ian Broughton, who's a professor of criminology. And we had a chat about criminology and anabolics, or the criminality of anabolics.
Okay.
And it was more to this quite a bit of research suggesting there is a link between anabolic steroid users and committing offences.
I could see that.
And it's primarily sort of edged on people who take steroids commit offences. And our take was no, it's more likely people who commit offences take steroids. Because the thing is not to mistake usage with a driver towards criminality. And part of that was looking at roid rage. And I mean, no, I don't think anyone really, the thing is, roid rage was very much a media term that was coined out of media exaggeration. And as a result, academia, particularly the harm reduction section within academia, sort of recoiled from that very strongly and was like, no, it doesn't happen. We now know that the truth is somewhere in the middle, in the fact, yeah, there are always potential preceding factors, but there is so much evidence of people, paranoia, jealousy within relationships, primarily around the use of tren, but there's other anabolics that can create situations as well. And the other big area that seems to create situations is driving, road rage, particularly again.
Yeah.
So the conversation was, look, it's not that steroids create aggressive people, but there may be aggressive incidents that occur due to certain anabolic use.
Yeah.
So you might get more of an overreaction over something that would be normal for an individual because they're on anabolics. And the big factors were domestic arguments and driving. But the other thing was that someone who's on anabolics, who's particularly focused, they're going to the gym, they're not communicating with their peers because they're there to get the job done, you know, headphones on, head down, they're training hard.
Yeah.
Many people would perceive that as him being aggressive.
Right. I get what you mean. Well, listen, we got to move on, though. We got to get our questions started because, unfortunately, we weren't able to hang out with you. We'd love for that's not going to be online or anything, is it?
I honestly don't know. I had to turn up. I turned up 10 minutes before I was on stage, did my piece, stopped 10, 15 minutes, and then I had to fly. So it was all very rushed yesterday. I'm just about catching up from the two expos back to back, but it's been a push.
No kidding. Michael Nagler, I like him. He says, I like Scott. How about that?
That's just Scott under a false account. Don't start with that rubbish.
All right, listen, first question. This is from YouTube. Guys, you did a great job leaving us questions for this episode on the last one. If you want to take part in the next show, then definitely comment below on YouTube or on Patreon. We've got a bunch of Patreon questions today, too. We're going to start with this one. He says, I love Dave's dry humor. I have a question for the next episode. Every compound that I've ever used other than tests seems to give me painful back pumps to varying degrees. I tried taurine and balancing my electrolytes in the past, but it's never worked. Just wondered if Dave has any insight into this and what would help me.
I suspect that, I mean, the normal go-to would be something like taurine. But I suspect that there's potentially more of a functional issue around hamstring flexibility and glute tightness that's just being exaggerated slightly when he goes on cycle, which is then aggravating the lower back. So I would definitely look at running through hamstring flexibility and making sure that is good and that glute mobility is good as well. Because if those two areas are tight, stress from just walking around gets driven up into the lower back. Yeah. That combined with weight coming down into the lower back, that's the point where the two meet, and that's the point where you start to get a massive back bump. So by ensuring you have good hamstring flexibility.
Scott's flannel is clinically proven to increase Dave's aggression.
I agree completely. So ensuring you've got good flexibility in the hamstrings and glutes will allow those muscles to move and take load correctly and pull some of the tension out of the back.
Yeah, I can see that. Plus, oftentimes we go on cycle, we're training harder, right? So if you're going to get like tight psoas and QL, stuff like that, that's more likely going to happen on cycle when you're training your hardest. Other thing I think is I noticed early on in cycling, I didn't have my nutrition as nailed as I figured out later. And you got to really clean up that diet. You know, if you're holding a ton of extra water on cycle, I'd look at that diet first. Because I think that we tend to, you know, you are going to hold more water. You are going to retain more sodium, right? And I think that if you keep that diet cleaner, you're less likely to have those issues. You may find that you can avoid having those issues except for when you have a cheat meal. You know, I do think that. And it may be even increasing fluids. You know, I wonder how much water he's drinking, but can he drink more?
They're all definitely potential contributors, yeah.
All right.
Management one as well. Is he managing his estrogen when he's on cycle?
We're just going to keep going then. We'll just dive in here and see what else. Oh, yeah. So I've got one about the hooligans. So I'd love to, if we have time. Guys, Dave's on a boat today, by the way. We might not have time. We might have to cut this show quick because he's got to move the boat. But regardless, we've got a question about the hooligans. People want to hear about them. What about L-carnitine? Is there a specific place that you want to take it IM that is going to enhance its effects more than others? My quick answer is no. Like once you go IM, it's going to basically just go systemic, right?
Yeah, I agree. With L-carnitine, I think there's two points of using it. It's pre-workout or AM fasted for increased fat loss. And I think that's pretty much it. And if you're doing it pre something, I would probably be more tempted to go IM than sub-Q anyway, just so you know it's in and it's in quickly, because sub-Q is just going to delay its absorption. But I don't think that it's definitely a buzz supplement at the moment. It's bounced around for quite a number of years, yeah. And all of a sudden it's very, very popular as a pre-workout. I don't think there's a huge amount in it. At the end of the day, if your nutrition's on point and everything else, you shouldn't need anything else to increase energy levels when you're training. But whatever. I mean, if it makes you smile, who cares?
Yeah, I found that it helped me with energy levels, especially like dealing with the post-long bug deal. That was like the first thing I noticed, that like my cognitive function was better. And so I started using it for that. But I do think it helped with fat loss as well. Victoria is a big fan of it for females, looking for things that are going to be non-anabolic that can help people, especially women that are dealing with like, you know, glucose regulation issues and stuff like that. She could get into something like that for sure. And it doesn't have to be as high as it used to be. Like we used to think you had to take 600, But, you know, I found like 300, 400 milligrams worked for me. And I think one of the reasons that it's gotten so popular is because they've been able to suspend it in higher milligrams. Like, we only used to get 200 milligrams per milliliter, but now at the Amino place, they have 600 milligrams per milliliter. I'm not going to even say the name of the Amino place.
I've used L-carnitine in hard cuts. It was dosed at 1,000, but there's significant increase in energy levels in a low calorie deficit with L-carnitine in place, because obviously it's making that fat much more bioavailable for use as energy. So I think it really comes into its own. The cognitive positives of it are quite well known as well and quite well studied, but I do really like it if someone's pushing hard on the low calories and getting to that point where they're struggling even though they've still got quite high levels of body fat.
Look at this nice little comment. Remembering Dave's health scare makes me that much more grateful that you guys, the work you guys do together here. Thanks, fellas. From Crohn's Lifter.
It wasn't a scare.
It scared us.
You don't do what I've done to myself and get away with it. You know what I mean? It just happened.
Okay. Oh, here's one for you. So, several years later now, we still have people that are just now buying the movie Under Construction. And Koa Boy, he says, just watched Under Construction. Dave was an absolute freak. Next episode, can we get Dave's thoughts on pushing max calories when bulking for pure muscle? I don't care about aesthetics.
So the first thing is, I don't believe in dirty bulks. I've not done it myself. I've always kept my diet clean. I'm quite happy to push through very, very high, but I do think it needs to be tight and strict. And I think a lot of people make a mistake in bulks because, particularly if they're competitive, because their pre-comp is so strict that they tend to lax off a little bit in the off-season. It works for some people. Doesn't work for me. I'm naturally a fat bugger in the best of times, so I've always had to be super, super tight, even off-season with big calories. Having said all that, it's not a case of just taking shitloads of food for the sake of it. I know there's a bit of popularity around the really old-school sort of approaches at the moment with Sam Sulek pushing that sort of just eat loads and train hard, and it will get you so far. There's no denying you can still make progress in that.
Yeah, especially for new guys, I think that can be beneficial, where you just need to start getting muscle on, you know?
Ian Harrison's another example. Ian used to eat tubs of ice cream in the off-season, as long as he was getting plenty of protein and he wasn't too strict about anything else.
Yeah.
But the man trained like an absolute insane maniac. You know, his intensity in the gym, the duration of his workouts with that and the calorie burn that he was producing while he was training was insane. So there is an element of that, but I do believe in keeping off-season clean, and I also believe in diets being progressive.
Yes.
In the same way as you will have progressive overload in the way you train, be it extra weight, better quality reps, more reps, whatever you choose for that progression to be, you need to be progressive with your diet. You don't want to be going from, you know, a 1,500 cut or a 2,000 maintenance and say, I'm going to bulk, let's do 4,000. You know, incremental, and just keep stepping it up and keep stepping it up. The thing is, what you've got to remember is you get bigger, your calorie maintenance increases. So if you're maintaining on 2,000, you do a bulk, and then you go back to a maintenance of 2,000, you're not going to support the structure you've built. You should aggressively be increasing your baseline calories each time you bulk, because you should be carrying more muscle mass and therefore need more calories to support it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if you start out of a maintenance of 2,500 calories and you spent 3 years progressively bulking and getting bigger, you should be sort of 5,000, 5,500 maintenance by the end of it. Otherwise, what's happened? Because if you're not growing and getting bigger, and you're not needing more calories to support that, then there's something wrong with your progress here. So, you know, diet's always going to be progressive. It's always going to be relative to the individual. Yeah. But, yeah, I don't be scared of pushing food high, but I do really believe in keeping it clean. I think for most people, that's a big mistake they make off-season. Good genetics, naturally lean, you can get away with more shit without doubt. But at the end of the day, shit calories is shit nutrition. It's shit energy sources. It's not going to do anything any good long term.
Yeah.
So if you're going to push hard and you're looking at maybe a 2-year off season because you want to come back with some real exercise, then quality of diet is incredibly important, but don't be scared of pushing them. And I think some people are scared to, well, I think more than some people are scared to eat. And it's a case of, you know, you go up 300-400 calories, you monitor condition. If condition's not worsening, condition's still good, you can go up again. If conditions start to soften a little bit, you can either pull the calories back or you can hold until the sort of progress catches up with where you are. And then push on again. But yeah, you need to be progressive, both in training and food.
Yep, I would agree with that 100%. And I can say that one of the mistakes I made is that I was somebody who for a long time was extremely active. I needed a lot of food in order to grow. It was basically a handicap because I was so active at work. And I would add in junk food on top of my food, but to a certain extent, it became counterproductive because it would slow my appetite down and make it harder to eat future meals. Not to mention, if you eat that stuff enough, you're looking at acid reflux, stomach issues. You know, no matter what, when you're pushing a lot of food, you're taxing your digestive system. And then you add like two McDoubles and a medium fry and two medium fries and two apple pies. You start eating that every day, which I did on top of my food. You know, you start pushing your digestion, and although it didn't show up as body fat, I do think that it had a negative effect on me in the long term. Now, how about this one, Dave? Oh, sorry, I was trying to keep moving because we have so many. What's up?
Well, I was just going to say that you may not get fat, but it doesn't mean it's not damaging your health.
Yeah, exactly. And my HDL, believe it or not, my LDL was fine, but my HDL was always in the crapper until I magically, when I came off, all of a sudden, it went back up to 40. I don't know how that happened. How about this? Can you do something on Mast with Primo? I can't find anything. Is there a reason for that? I responded to him in the comments. Just my thought is, Dave, it's kind of redundant. You know, two somewhat similar DHTs. If I were to add in if I went with Mast in test or Primo in test, and then I wanted to add in a third compound, I would probably look to a different family, you know, be it a 19 nor or an oral, something that's going to be unique and different versus more of something that's going to be similar, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of popularity over here at the moment for test based with Mast and Primo. It's
all three?
All three.
Yeah.
And I sort of see it a little bit as Mast will tend to act like a CERM rather than an AI, where Primo will act more like an AI. But at the same time, I get what you're saying as well, because they're two very similar compounds, so they've got very similar planes of action and mechanism. I mean, I'm not a big Primo fan for off season. I think it's a nice compound for prep, but I think off-season it's just a bit too mild from a point of view of, you know, actually encouraging tissue, whereas Mast is a little bit more aggressive on that front. So, I mean, I think Testeca and Mast is a lovely little compound for off-season if you're wanting to do, you know, keep conditioning at a level.
Agreed.
But, yeah, I you can stack what you want, and an increase in androgens is always going to, to an extent, yield a better result if everything else is on point. But the adulteration that those two compounds combine has on HDL has me concerned long term. We still don't really know how impacting the low HDL is going to be long term. The research wise of it is very inconclusive. The only real relatable fact I have is that throughout all my bulking, my LDL was low, because even though I ate a ton of food, I used to boil my chicken and meat and strip a lot of fat out of it, and my actual food intake was very, very lean. The one thing I did have and struggle with, though, was low HDL. And I ended up with a blocked artery, which is a cholesterol-based problem. So it wasn't a high LDL that created that issue, it was low HDL. So I do think that particularly the levels that we see in anabolic users, there is a potential risk there for high exposure to mast and primo. But having said that, decent LDL management will go a long way to offset it. But there's plenty of guys where their LDL management isn't great, but they're still hammering the mast and primo. And they're the ones that are potentially going to be struggling in 5 to 10. And that's the problem. It's 5-10 years down the line. And yeah, how do you really an incident in 10 years' time to something you did 10 years ago? It's difficult to do. But I'm not a fan. I've said all along that I like the right tool for the right job, and I don't like forcing compounds that aren't particularly designed to bulk with into bulking periods in the same way I wouldn't naturally look at using Deca in a cut. You can do it. I've seen it done. But I wouldn't naturally lean that way, like you wouldn't use D-Bell in a cut naturally, because you're going to have more problems handling estrogen. I wouldn't naturally go to Primo as a bulking agent, because the doses you're going to be pushing to get any real major decent tissue effect from it are going to be quite high, where you could use half that or a third of that dose and just run Deca.
Yeah, and you're speaking more to a more advanced guy. Now, that said, you know, a newer, less experienced guy, you know, maybe a low, modest dose of Primo and mast and test, or just a modest dose of Primo and test. You know, I agree with you. It's not the best builder, but if you've never taken anything before, or you only did a couple,
taken anything before, you're going to grow on.
So I just want to be clear, though, because you're talking about guys that are in the game already. I would agree with you 100%, man. I don't see Primo or mast as being especially beneficial mast builders. I don't believe that all steroids are created equal. I don't think that. I think there's been some miscalculations in that. There's no question. Go ahead.
Their mechanisms of actions are all very similar, but that's where I think it ends. There is some very strong differences between different compounds. If there wasn't, then, I mean, you've only got to look at the industry. There's no shortage of mass monsters from the 80s and 90s when Test and Deca was very, very popular.
Yeah, yeah.
There was still probably a big fucking 280, 290, 300-pound guy standing on stage.
I would say this too. The only time I would consider really adding two DHTs is in a contest prep, and it wouldn't be for the whole thing. And that kind of ties into our next question. Hey, what's up, guys? I have a lot of people who reach out to me on a regular basis who are trying to more effectively reach their goals. One of the biggest mistakes I see people make is that they're not getting enough protein. And there's only so much chicken breast we can eat through the day, but we can easily add a high quality protein supplement to boost those numbers up. True Nutrition has just about every protein powder you can think of, from high quality whey isolate. If you don't tolerate lactose, then you could use their beef isolate, or you could use their pea protein isolate if you don't eat animal products. They literally have everything you could think of. I've believed in them for like a decade before they advertised with us. And they never went out of their way to say like, hey, we want to promote our stuff through you. I literally asked them because it's a company that I believe in. And at the end of the day, I want to see you guys reach your goals as effectively as possible. So if you use our code THINK at True Nutrition, you'll get some savings, you'll help to support our programming, and you'll get some high quality products to more effectively reach your goals faster. By the way, guys, you noticed I'm not putting these up on the screen. I think putting them up on the screen has been not helpful for our ability to monetize the show. So I'm just going to read them. He says, question for the next show. Hi, boys. Love the show. Glad to see you back and airing on YouTube. So needing help for a prep cycle, competing in September for the first time. He says, I'm not new to gear and have a few cycles under my belt. He says, I still don't want to go crazy. He said, what are your thoughts on this? So 400 test E, 1 to 16 weeks. Then 700 Primo, 1 to 16 weeks. Then adding in a little bit of Winnie at 25 every day, 7 through 12. And then adding in Tren A at 300 per week, 9 through 12. I would assume, so he's saying he's doing a 16-week plan, but then he's only going to run the Win and the Tren for up to week 12. I wouldn't do that. I would run those compounds all the. I would run them all the way in to the show. But you share your thoughts, Dave, and I'll tell them what I think too.
Is this comp prep? Yeah.
Yeah, comp prep first contest.
I would definitely leave the Trenton winning to the back end. Personally, I'd probably only run it for the last five maybe.
Both of those compounds?
No, I'd probably start the Trenton 5 weeks out, bring the Winnie in 2 to 3 weeks out. I don't think Winnie needs to be run particularly long, particularly if you're lean. I think it'll have a nice effect from 2 or 3 weeks out. You could even... It's very old school to drop injectables now running into a show, and it's also very European. But if you're concerned about lumps and bumps and things like that, then obviously you could drop your injectables a week out and run in just on the winner. But yeah, I don't see the reason for having it sort of in the middle almost and then pulling it back out again.
Right.
I'd also be a little bit concerned of potential rebound issues from estrogen or progesterone, because obviously Winstrol is going to lower progesterone and it's anti-estrogenic as well. And you've got a sort of active anabolic AI in there, and then you pull it out. You may get a little bit of rebound going into the last few weeks, which is far from ideal. So I would definitely run them at the back end into the comp. I think the main difference between me and you is that you would probably run them slightly longer than me. But a lot of that depends on where he is conditioning and stuff-wise as well. You know, if he's not quite on point where he needs to be, then you could bring him in a little bit earlier. He's only going to help. But, yeah, I mean, a lot would depend on how he's sitting condition-wise as to if compound times would extend or not.
Yeah. Okay, so here's what I would do a little bit different. He's got the 400 testy, 700 primo, 25 every day win, and the trend at 300 a week. Those are both like quitting at 12 weeks, like 7 to 12 and 9 to 12. Personally, I would do 400 tests, 400 primo, keep it at like a 1 to 1. I think that works really nice personally. And then from there, the trend might go in at 6 weeks out, run it for the last six. And then the win would go in at about 4 weeks out, and I'd probably take that a little bit higher. So, and by the way, trying to do 50 every other day, so less than he's suggesting, and the win streak might go a little bit more, like 50 every day, something like that, just for the last 3 to 4 weeks. But I run those things all the way in. We're kind of crescendoing into the show, and really, it's all going to be about your ability to get in contest shape. The condition is really the key. That these compounds are not going to make a difference. You could really get rid of everything and just do the test and then add some Winstrol in for the last 4 to 6 weeks. And that would honestly be enough for your first show. Like the guys you're going up against at a state level show, you can get absolutely peeled and bury them if you're in good enough shape. Guarantee it with just those compounds.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I'd probably change possibly is bringing Primo up slightly towards the end and possibly even dropping the test down a little bit just so you've got a more estrogen suppressing setup. But otherwise, yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely see where we're at estrogen-wise a little ways in and then make some decisions off of that. And maybe again toward the end, you know, and see, hey, do we want to make any calls to change? But really, I feel like if we're looking good and we're getting the look we want at that 1 to 1, I'm going to try to change as few things as possible because I don't want to risk throwing things off. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I
mean, that's always the question, isn't it? I look good. Would I look better if I did this, or would it go the wrong way?
And that's where having a coach really comes in handy, because in our own heads, we're always like, yeah, I always want to shoot for a little bit more. But, you know, Chris Aceto said, I'd rather bring guys in at 97%, 95 to 97% any day of the week. Because if you shoot for 100, you're either going to get 100 or you're going to get 105, which is spilled, you know, or bad in some way, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
All completely. Right. How about this one? Andrew says, and this is from Patreon. He says, question for the DNS podcast. We'll let you guys figure out what that stands for because we don't say it anymore. Anytime I get above 1.5 grams total gear, I have an increase in water intake to nearly double just to stay hydrated. Hydration, electrolyte intake is normally on point. Never any problems when on lower doses. But when I get to that 1.5 gram point, plus I'm getting dehydrated every hour or so if I'm not consistently taking in a lot of water. Currently on 875 tests, 700 mast in 4IU growth every day. Just curious what the mechanisms would be behind this, or should I just deal with it? Should I deal with it? It happens my last several cycles.
So, couple of questions I have. I'll get on to the mechanism why I genuinely aren't sure. I've got a couple of potential stabs at it, but it could be more intracellular water. It could be an increased body temp resulting in more low-level sweating, which is resulting in more fluid loss. I honestly aren't sure. What I'm curious about is, why does he think he's hydrated? I mean, is this something he's physically measured with a blood and he's seen sodium adulterations and stuff like that? Or is this just going on because he feels thirsty? Or what is gauging that he feels he's dehydrated? I mean, there's no doubt as anabolics go up, body temperature rises. And as food consumption goes up, body temperature rises as well. And also as food consumption goes up, water transit with glycogen is going to increase as well. So there's definitely a few factors that could contribute to being more fluids. Being exactly double or as extreme as this sounds, I find a little bit bemusing. And I'm not for 1 minute saying he's not wrong. I'm just curious as to what the exact details are of what experiencing to come to the conclusion that he's dehydrating at that rate and needs that amount of extra fluid. And is his urination increasing when he's up in the fluid? Because if he's up in the fluid and his urination is not increasing, then that water's going somewhere. Is there an estrogen impact here where he's actually holding water more? So it's not actually getting into the cell where you want it and it's sitting subdermally. Is that going on? You know, is that what's happening with some of the fluids? I mean, you can hold water retention quite significantly and actually be dehydrated still because your electrolyte balance is incorrect and you're not just pushing the fluids into the cell like you want to. So there's things like that. Is electrolyte increasing with the water so that he's making use of that extra fluid or not? So there's I've got more questions than answers, unfortunately.
Yeah, could it be something kidney related? You know, is there any kind of additional stress that could be happening?
Yeah,
I don't know.
There is. A lot of it would depend on compounds and things like blood pressure and stuff like that. But if his kidneys were starting to struggle, and it's definitely an area worth looking at, then you would see water retention, which he's not reported in what he said. That doesn't mean it's not happening, but you know, I'm assuming because he's not mentioned he's getting water retention, it's not there.
Yeah.
But is there an increase in frequency of urination? But as it's this causing this. I don't have anything, unfortunately. Yeah. I just got a lot of little things that might add up to something.
Blood sugar can cause more hydration need or more thirst, I'll say.
More thirst, that's it. It's not dehydration, it's more thirst. And is there something there? That's why I was saying, is he dehydrated or is he just thirsty? That was the point I was trying to make. You know, is he genuinely dehydrated or is he just feeling thirstier?
How about this one? Look at that comment. Love the show. Please do your cardio, Uncle Dave. You were talking about how you had been really busy and you had gotten away from doing your cardio.
The thing is, I mean, we've come down here. I'm still working. I'm in the office. I'm still working full time, but give our last a bit of a break. I've just found out that I've missed an appointment. I was supposed to do a consult with somebody at the office today, and obviously I'm not there. I'm here.
Ooh.
So I mean, shit. Yes, surgery is in 2 weeks on the 5th of April, and then I can't move my left arm above parallel for 6 to 8 weeks, I think they said. And for the first week, I can't remove the dressing, so there won't be anything happening that week, and then I'm hoping to get back on it after that.
Okay. Well, we'll all look forward to seeing you recover. You haven't really talked much about this procedure or anything on the show. That was all off the air, so people didn't really know that you were doing
something. No, I apologize. I thought I had. Basically, I'm having an ICD fitted, which is a bit like a pacemaker and an auto defib. So it has two shock mechanisms. One is a rhythmic adjustment, and one is a full-blown boom, as you'd get off a set of panels. It's more in because of future measures rather than immediate needs. So the general idea behind it is stick it in now while I can cope with it very, very easily, rather than be trying to fit it when I'm 60-odd and potentially having problems in that procedure in itself.
Yeah.
It's only a dead case, so I'm only in there for 5-6 hours. It's not a bad job, but I am quite limited movement-wise for a period of time afterwards with my left arm, because I have a sheen that's been dropped into my left pec with a wire running straight into my heart.
Mm. It doesn't sound like fun.
Oh, apparently they're fun when they fire.
All right, how about this one from Jim McDonald on Patreon? He says, I've had some really crazy dreams lately, mid-cycle. Is that pretty normal?
Don't know how much LSD you're taking.
Oh, we can't say words like that, Dave.
Why not?
Because YouTube doesn't like those words. They're like, oh, that must be what this content is about. Bam.
Well, of course it is. All right. Well, how much psychostimulating compounds are you administrating? No. It's you get an increase in brain activity through anabolics. This can manifest in several ways. A common one is obviously anxiety, paranoia, that sort of stuff. But also it can change the way you dream. And Trend's got a reputation for giving people incredibly vivid dreams. And it's just the fact that your neuron activity is stimulated by the anabolics and it changes, you know, the chemical signaling in your brain. And not only that, but how active it is as well. So it affects things. I mean, a lot would depend on the compounds you were using as well.
Yeah. All right. So we talked a little bit about androgen receptors in fat the other week. A question regarding the fat androgen receptor. He says,
it's a big fat receptor.
I read that the number of cells that actually store fat don't get less in number, they just shrink. So guess would be that the AR in the cell, what's he saying here? My guess would be the AR would be in cell and not the stored fat. What do you mean by that? Do you mean like... I think I get what he's saying, that you have the same number of fat cells, whether they're big or small. But if you get more fat, the more fat you get, those cells do replicate. You will get more fat cells.
Those fat cells do increase, yes.
Yeah.
And there are certain compounds that will actually remove fat cells.
Like liposuction. Well, that's not a compound. But you literally get rid of fat wherever you get that done at, you know?
So first thing is to understand how compounds and receptors sort of engage with each other. So the androgen bobbles along and it will go into a cell, engages with the receptor, deposits its signal, and then it comes out of the cell. It can then go into another cell. It can then get attached to aromatin and convert to estrogen. It can get attached to SHBG or albumin. It can do numerous things. Once it's converted to estrogen, it can then go in and get attached to an ER. Or it can attach to SHBG again and get moved somewhere else. So this is a continual flow of compounds hitting receptors, releasing from receptors, hitting secondary receptors, or changing through an aromatized process, or changing because of 5-alpha reductase into DHT, and then hitting another receptor. So, an androgen doesn't just go into a receptor plug-in, do its job, and that's the end of it. It comes back out, and it will continue to operate until it dies. When you have more active fat cells, and I'm not 100% on the mechanisms at play here, so I know that there are ARs in fat cells, and I know androgen receptors can be attracted to them. sorry, androgens can be attracted to them. But I believe as fat cells diminish, as they sort of collapse, the engagement process becomes much more difficult because you've got a cell structure that's actually been deflated. It's no longer fat and bouncy and, you know, and it quite literally becomes difficult for it to enter the cell. So that's why leaner people need less anabolics and respond better. But, I mean, a lot of anabolics medically are dosed body weight-wise to an extent, particularly when you look at stuff like Anadrol and how that's dosed at milligram per kilo in children, a slightly higher dose in females and adults. So there's a lot of anabolics are dosed per kilo weight because that's how they want the effect to work. It's something that Broderick still believes in across the board with anabolics. Me, not so much. But definitely someone carrying higher body fat levels is not going to have the same response of somebody of a leaner, even if their muscle mass was equal. Because some of the anabolics they're taking, they're not going to get used up by the fat, but there isn't going to be as much availability for the AR in muscle because some of it's going to be tied up in the fat, but it's only for a brief period of time. So it isn't a case of it goes in fat, it stays there. And as fat cells collapse and de-shrink, I'm assuming on this one, I must admit, but I believe that the accessibility then to the AR is compromised to some extent. And it's constantly a renewal process. You know, they're in, they're out, they move to something else. I mean, you could have a testosterone enter the bloodstream, enter a muscle cell, enter the AR, do a signal, come back out, get picked up by aromatase, convert to estrogen, then go into an ER, then come back out, then get picked up by SHBG, taken to another part of the body, and then die. Yeah. Or it could convert to DHT and then go back into another receptor as DHT. So there's all these things going on all the time. It's a very busy highway when it comes to the movement of this stuff. I think a lot of people think it goes in, it plugs in, and that's it. It's done. It's like putting a plug into a socket, and then that's nothing else happens. And it's not the case. It is constantly moving and flowing.
All right. I had one more serious question here, I think, and then we had some fun stuff. Somebody asked me. They said, "Scott, I know that you've trained guitarists before. Have you ever trained a drummer? Are there any exercises I should do or avoid?" And he says, "Edit. Are there any injuries that I should watch out for as a drummer? Love the show. Keep up the great work." I thought that was an interesting question. I can't think of anything, Dave, that I would do differently. I can tell you this. I feel like in the band, any band, the drummer is always the jacked guy. The drummer is the guy that has like the sleeveless t-shirt on and you can see his biceps while he's doing his thing versus, you know, across the board most of the time. That doesn't include some of your more jacked people. I mean, Kevin Lavroni was a guitarist / singer, I believe, and Glenn Danzig was a big guy. Henry Rollins was a big guy, and they weren't drummers, but I think your drummers are usually the more jacked guy. I honestly, all I can think of is that you would have a lot of repetitive use. I could see there being like forearm elbow tendonitis issues like that from drumming. And I just feel like you just want to look out for that. But there's nothing in particular I would say, oh, drummers need to do this. You know what I mean, Dave?
Yeah, I would probably say that forearm stress management is where you're going to be thinking, and potentially just stuff like you might need to be a bit more reliant on straps and grips when you're training so that you don't overwork the forearm that then becomes an issue when you're drumming. I suppose that could be something. I think the other thing is possibly down to your level of experience. That's a very good point, Brandon put. Growth. Yeah, I don't think that was going to work very well in a drumming environment.
Yeah. I would say maybe like if you feel like you're getting some sort of development while drumming, maybe think about the opposite muscles. Like for those of us that sit at a desk all day, we get a tendency to hunch over like this and everything kind of tightens up. And if you have good musculature, those pecs, and even if you don't, your pecs are going to get tight. They're going to pull you forward. They're going to roll your shoulders forward so that you're standing there like the monkey look with when, you know, your hands are forward. Your hands should be like this when you're relaxed, not forward like that. So we want to make sure that, like, you know, being able to first stretch the pecs, number one, that's going to alleviate a lot of shoulder issues, back issues. But then also strengthening your upper back will help to pull you into a neutral posture. So if you're doing anything repetitive, I would look at, well, how is that affecting your physique and musculature, and what can you do that's the opposite of that, the opposite muscles, to kind of keep you in balance. That'd be my only thought. You know, Dave, we had a fun one, though. We wanted to hear, you told us a long time ago, it's been a while, we want to know about the hooligans, the football hooligans of the UK. In fact, I remember you had a story that you told a long time ago. I can't remember what it was, but it had to do with like a bar fight.
Well, I don't think they're as prevalent as they used to be, but there was, as much as there was a football league, there was a hooligan league linked to the football teams.
Okay.
And certain football teams were notorious for having extremely violent fans, Millwall being one of them, who were particularly known for being violent. Bradford City was never a high division football team, but they were a very high division hooligan squad. And these would schedule events. So on match day, they would arrange to meet at a certain location and beat the 10 balls of living snot out of each other. And it was surprisingly well organized and was kept away from the police as much as possible. I mean, obviously it spilled over into matches themselves at the time, but there was very often, and particularly as clampdowns became more severe and people started getting banned from football grounds because of hooliganism, they would, arrange distance from the ground and literally have an arranged war.
Between, like, yeah. I like this particular, I'm going to say soccer, okay? Because when I say football, all I think of is American football. So I'm sorry, guys, anybody in the UK.
You have, say, the Millwall supporters against the Arsenal supporters.
Yeah, or, so these are guys that are for one soccer team. They're like, I like this team. And these other guys are like, I like this team. And then they're like, let's have a bloody battle and beat each other up to the pulp.
They were brutal. They weren't just a few slaps. I mean, they were proper kicking 10 balls out of each other. I think it's past its peak now. I know when we went into Europe with the football, like some of the Polish teams, they were next level with their hooliganism. And we actually start, I mean, I say, I think it's calmed down a lot over the last decade, but I do remember there being a Leeds fan being killed.
Oh, really?
In a football hooligan clash. And I mean, there's been definitely several guys, you know, hospitalized over the years. But I think it was a Turkish football team that the Leeds fan got killed on. And literally every Turkish kebab shop in Leeds shut up because they went on a rampage.
Really?
Through Leeds, smashing up every Turkish kebab shop they could find.
Oh, my God.
It was brutal stuff. I mean, they did think nothing of, throwing missiles, not actual missiles, but like bricks and stones and stuff at the opposing fans' coaches, and windows smashed, windscreens went through, people got bricks in their head. Weapons became quite common at the peak of it. It was incredibly violent, but there was also a hardcore sort of core to it where they were almost quite strict with what they would allow and not allow. And they were, they would meet up, they would fight, but there'd be limitations in the fact that it would only be bare fists or whatever it was. But there was no limitations on how much damage they'd do to somebody.
Here's a picture I found of some hooligans. Look like they're just like tearing everything up here.
They look like England fans. England had a very bad reputation overseas.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so much so that there was a lot of people banned from traveling.
I've seen that. I've seen where there's like pictures and they're like, these are the faces of people that were banned. Like this. It says football hooligans banned from every UK stadium and after pre-match brawl outside of pub. And it shows these four gentlemen.
Yeah, really? No, there's
These look like people. I could see Dave's picture in this. Could you guys see Dave in this?
There's people that have received lifetime bans from football grounds. They can never go and watch the team they support ever again.
So did you have a story in particular? I want to say there's something about like bar towels or something like that. I can't remember what it was. Didn't you told me a story of working at a bar or a pub and you knew the hooligans were coming or something like that? I'd have to dig way back. I'd have to listen to like every episode. But you worked.
I can't remember. I do remember one. I used to work a Clacton Pier, south of England.
Okay.
Clacton's a seaside resort. Clacton Pier used to do all night raves. And to get to the pier, you went down like a road that became a little short bridge onto the pier itself. And there was like a big, not quite a car park, but there was a big area at the front of the pier. And there was all these doors for access onto the pier. And I remember Millwall decided they were going to call in on the way back from a match. And the police, the fuckers. So they let the Millwall coach come down to the pier. And then they closed the road off behind the coach. And then just left all us doormen on the pier to deal with the Millwall fans. The police just sat there and watched as all hell broke loose.
Wait, what do you mean they closed the road?
They closed the road. So the police didn't want to have to deal with the Millwall fans.
So they let the coach in.
So they let the coach to come down the road to the pier and pull up, let the Millwall fans get off the coach, but then they closed the road at the top so they couldn't get out and left it for all the doormen to fight with the Millwall fans.
Oh, wow.
Because they didn't want to bother with it. So they thought, well, let's let the doormen soften them up a bit and then we'll go in and clean up the mess.
Yeah. Jeez.
But yeah, I've had a few scrapes over the years. Bradford used to be quite violent. The Bradford City hooligans were the football team was absolutely garbage, but the hooligans were quite next level.
Now, if you saw a hooligan, would you know it? Like, because I feel
necessarily.
Like
some are very obvious, but not necessarily.
What would be like the standard stereotypical look of a hooligan?
Right back then, I mean, we're going back a bit. So back then, it would be Rockport shoes, Stone Island jumper.
Stone Island.
They would be the sort of clothing code. Ben Sherman shirts, that sort of thing.
Do these guys look like hooligans? Let's see.
They look like a bunch of knobs posing for a picture.
It says how the hooligan style ended up in hipsters' Instagram. So I guess that's probably true. They look like they were not real hooligans.
Yeah, there was definitely a certain fashion trend.
They have like a Burberry ad. This is a Burberry ad, and it says that like hooligan culture influenced this clothing line.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah, I mean they were quite organized. It wasn't random. You know what I mean? They were quite organized.
I had a friend who was in Ireland, and she said you weren't allowed to wear tennis shoes into the pub back when she went. This would have been like 2000.
Oh, a lot of the pubs created dress codes. The thing is, as when you were stood on the door and a group of lads came up, you didn't want them in, obviously, but you didn't want to directly confront them and say you're not coming in because you're a bunch of lads.
Yeah.
So you try and use rules that were the establishment's rules that you knew they would accept. So one of them was, look, we don't allow trainers, mate, or we don't allow sportswear, you know, and stuff like that. So you were refusing them because of something they done that was an acceptable rule rather than saying, we're not letting you in because you look a dick.
Yeah.
Because then they got personally insulted by it, and obviously that created friction. So there was a lot of bars created dress codes to keep a certain look or style of person out of the venue.
When we went to Betty's, we wore tennis shoes, and we were sneakers. They let us in.
Well, that's changed in the last 15 years. Even I remember clubs even 20 years ago were starting to allow trainers in. Because the big argument was that trainers and jeans in a lot of cases cost four times more than the shoes and trousers that somebody else was wearing.
Oh, yeah. Anymore.
And the other thing was, you know, it required intelligence to assess someone as a person before you let them in the venue, which wasn't always that readily available amongst the doormen. So if you gave them a set of rules that were black and white, they could follow those quite easily without having to use any common sense.
That makes sense. All right. Well, listen, do you have any Uncle Dave's wisdom? People sometimes tune in just to hear your wisdom, Dave. They want to know what you think.
Yeah, don't arrange for meetings and then not be there, because then you look a complete dick and have to ring up and apologize.
Yeah. That's good. That's a really important one.
I'm a bit short this week, I suppose.
I think that is a fair advice, though. I'm going to say that.
These last 2 weeks have been so hectic that I'm literally forgetting where I'm going and what I'm doing.
Are you getting caught up yet, though?
I think I've got about 15 reports. This is the first week I've done clients and actually being on time with them.
Yeah.
But I've got about 15 reports to do, but I've got today and tomorrow to get them cleared. And then I've got a big court report to do, but that's been put back, so I've got a bit more time with that.
Is that the same court case that there were like amps and vials, like lots of them?
No, that one's done. I've done the paperwork for that. That's gone. This is another one that they've come back with more evidence and want a secondary report.
Okay, interesting.
And they're now telling me they want me to read through 33,000 pages of phone data.
Oh, God. Why you? You're the anabolics guy. You're not the phone data
I've
guy.
Data and look for anabolics. It's not fucking. There's no
why don't
way.
They put that in like a text file where you can then just like search terms versus have it printed?
Yeah,
out?
Well, they do a lot of that, but the problem with that is you often miss a lot of stuff, because if me and you were talking about something of that nature, we may reference the compound at one point, but a lot of the conversation we probably would just talk in general.
Right.
Because we know what we're talking about. So we wouldn't keep saying, and the testosterone in Anthony needs to be this, and it's this price, and I can get it from, you know, you wouldn't say that in every sentence, would you? You'd say it once at the beginning of the conversation and never say it again.
Yeah, that's it. You know.
So you've got to really read them. But I need to have a chat with them and see what they want to do with this, because if they want me to read through 33,000 pages, they are going to be paying a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah. And how was the Arnold? Because we haven't seen you since then. You had the Arnold, and then after that, you had literally another expo, like Wednesday, I think, or something. So you had to Tuesday when we normally record. So
yeah. So the Arnold's, from a point of view of an expo, I thought was very good.
Okay.
There were a few screw-ups in the broader spectrum. I know a few stands that had a few problems with their location being moved or issues around certain aspects of the show. But in general, the athletes were there, the stars were there. It was, I thought, very good from that point. From a sales point of view, it wasn't the strongest. Friday was good. Friday was actually very good Friday. Saturday was okay, and Sunday was absolutely terrible. I think the biggest problem we had with Sunday was that where we were located, there was no reason for people to come down that end of the expo, because there was nothing going on event-wise down that end.
But look who Dave got to meet.
Yes, I met Dusty and Ron. I think they were as much as like, why are we taking a picture with this guy, as I was. But
well, they probably thought that you were like just a fan, you know, you're like, hey,
yeah, possibly, yeah, you know? Possibly.
And you brought the cabbage, you're like, why is this man holding a stuffed animal? Let's just take a picture with him. You know, yeah, like it's kind of like they did you a favor, I think.
But, you know, I mean, there was from our stand point of view, the visual, though the stand itself wasn't great because it was just a shell stand, but the visual engagement was really good. I mean, Jesse James West interviewed us on the Saturday.
Okay.
That was supposed to be a 30-minute interview, ended up being like an hour and a half. Then he came and spent a couple of hours on the stand. And he interviewed Nathan, he interviewed Josh Law, interviewed Romana, who else? He interviewed Zach. We stood in the stand and two of the top steroid researchers in the UK. Remember the guy that did the episode with us when he was looking at muscle memory and that sort of stuff? He came to the stand and he brought another guy who's doing a book on anabolics, not so much a a technical book, more just a book looking at the use and lifestyle and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
They were on the stand for a while as well, so they got interviewed by Jesse too. So, yeah, it was a really good vibe in that way. Staff seemed to really enjoy it. We seemed to have a good time with the staff. Performex was a lot different. We were doing the first day. There was some mix-up with what we were supposed to be doing time-wise, so we ended up working 7 till 10 Wednesday, 7 till 10 Thursday, and 7 till, well, it was supposed to be 1 in the morning, but we got away about midnight on Friday.
You mean 7 then, in the morning, just to be clear, yeah, until 10 yeah. at night.
And then we drove through the night to get back so I could get the van back for 8 o'clock Saturday morning, because the hire place had it going back out the next day, so we had to get it back. So that was a bit tiring. I enjoyed Performex. It was quiet in the sense of noise. Yeah. So you could talk to people, but instead of talking to an end user, you were talking to a gym owner, or you were talking to someone that owned 40 gyms, or you were talking to another business. And so it's a lot harder to gauge how the event went, because it's probably going to be 2-3 months before we see the results of those conversations.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
It gave me a lot of food for thought about what we want to do moving forward and what we're going to do if we do anything moving forward. So it was very positive in that sense, but very tiring. But yeah, I mean, I think both events were quite good in a way, and we've just pretty much finished designing the new stand. So that should be getting made soon. That's going to be funny.
Yeah, you see, I know you didn't bring the big tent, as I call it, the bounce house. You didn't bring that to the Arnold because it was just it took up too much space. You did have Jamie the Giant there. I heard he is an absolute celebrity in the UK now.
He did, and so Jamie came down the stand on Sunday. Obviously, he's got a lot of financial obligation to a lot of sponsors now, so he popped down. It wasn't for long, 10, 15 minutes or so, but I was just glad he could make it, to be honest. Yeah. But what worked out really well, as Jamie was on the stand, Diamond, who's one of the other gladiators, she's like 6'2" lass. I mean, she really is a tall lass. She was wandering past, saw Jamie, so came over to the stand. So we ended up with 2 gladiators for 1 on the Sunday, which worked out really, really well.
That's cool.
But I mean, the Sunday from sort of 1 o'clock onwards where we were was dead.
Yeah. Okay.
It was just dead. Was crap, but I found a new sport which I think I might have to take up.
What's that?
Medieval fighting.
Oh, I could totally see you doing that. I could totally see you and your wife could practice in the backyard or on your barge. Yeah. You guys just get on the roof of the barge and do it.
It's nuts. It's absolutely these fucking lunatics dress up in armor.
They had them at the Ohio Arnold too.
Just beat the living shit out of each other.
Yeah, yeah. We saw one guy walking out like holding his head, you know, he's so, like, oh.
We from what we know, there was 1 broken leg, 1 severed finger, several injuries. But they're just smashing 10 balls of shit out of each other. It is legal. It's like, I love this. And in fact, there's a pro division as well.
You could totally do that, Dave. We got to get your cardio up a little. And
but they were saying they were so on the Sunday they were doing 12-on-12, and basically the object is just to get the other guy on the floor. So okay. It's like 24 people just brain crap out of each other.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, I didn't see it happening, but I saw it at the Arnold. I saw all the guys dressed up in the stuff and the garb. And like I said, I saw one guy walking away, holding his head, walking out of the expo, holding his helmet down at his side. He looked like he took a good whack to the head. I wonder if there's weight classes, or would they put up like a big guy like you against a 160-pound guy?
There's male and female, but other than that, that's it.
So, Dave, you could go against like 3 guys, and you take like a big hammer. You've got the hammer already. Bring that hammer and just clear them all in one smack.
Honestly, it's just mental. I've never seen anything quite like it in my life. It's just, I said to the guy, I said, so what's the rules? He said, you can't hit him in the nuts. He said, and you can't stab him in the neck.
Yeah.
Anything else? not really. So that's just about it.
And I think that's a little safer than the slap fighting. At the Arnold, they were doing slap fighting. And man, those guys really pack a wallop. I'd seen pictures of a dude whose face was like permanently, I think, paralyzed due to slap fighting. That stuff's a mess, man.
No, there wasn't any of that. But yeah, it was. I actually enjoyed it. I think it suffered a bit because of previous shows not being as they were supposed to be.
Okay.
But I think this one has established that, you know, it's now Arnold running it, and they are going to do it right, and it's going to be the right people turning up. I mean, you know, Ronnie was there, Phil Heath was there, Sam Sulu was there, obviously
your Dave Crossland best, was there.
I was there, yes. Hadi Chopin, Fouad, Wes Vissers, and another one who's on their team. I'm not sure who that guy was. Obviously, there was Jamie. Miss Olympia was there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there was a lot of people. And a lot of big names, more than we would normally see, and a lot of American brands that we wouldn't normally see as well.
Yeah, America, I think the U.S. took an interest, and at the Mutant booth, Ron told me the number one question they got is, where's Scott? So I'll be seeing you at the Arnold next year.
I hope not.
I hope not too, but, you know, it's a small... I won't come over. I'll be like, I have obligations to mute.
The Arnold's was terrible for us. I don't think we're going to do it again.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to connect one way or another. And well, Victoria well, and well, I want to come out no matter what. Like this, she's getting things finished up, and when she does, we are making a grand tour. We want to go to we'll start in southern England, and then we'll travel up, do a bunch of stuff in northern England. And then she wants to go to Edinburgh, Scotland, as I know your wife does too. So you may not have a choice to hang out with me. We might all be going to Scotland together.
Well, bring your armor.
Yeah. We'll practice in the backyard. All right, guys. We appreciate everybody for tuning in. Thanks for watching. TrueNutrition.com. Use our code THINK for additional savings. SupplementSource.ca for Canadians. Strom Sports Nutrition. We don't have a code for them, but if they have like a little note thing where you can add notes to your order, what should they say, Dave?
Oh, Richard's torn his pec.
Oh, you're kidding me. He was doing so good.
Apparently he tried getting some sweets off a 5-year-old and she tore his arm out.
Oh, God. Well, I'll have to ask him about that. And of course, thank you to everybody from Patreon.
He was doing some content work, some content filming, and they were grappling, and apparently he just went a bit beat on.
Oh, jeez. Guys, for another episode, evalbloodanalysis.com. Go there. Get your lab work done by Dave. What were you going to say?
I'm up in Aberdeen next weekend doing a seminar and a Granite City show.
Oh, really? Aberdeen, Washington? Great. No, that's really cool.
Scotland.
Oh, a different Aberdeen. Okay.
Yes, the real Aberdeen, not the copy one.
All right, guys, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you soon. Questions for the next show, leave them.